Are you ready to get fired up for the next game? Nothing helps more than a bowl of Campbell's new chunky spicy chicken noodle soup. Let me tell you, it's got tons of seasoned chicken, veggies, and noodles all in a tasty, spicy broth. So it'll fill you up and get you fired up. So take your day to the next level and see if you can handle the heat with the new chunky spicy chicken noodle soup.
Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Bruff of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are also brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit campbell-pound.com today. Finally, I forgot to mention this earlier when we were doing preseason coverage of the Canucks with Kevin Woodley from NHL.com and Ingle Magazine. But all Canucks preseason coverage on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by Black & Lee. Suiting up just got easier for modern suit and tuck sales, fashionable menswear, and same-day rentals. Visit them online at blackandlee.com. Real quick, a few of you pointed out last segment that I used the old intensive purposes instead of the correct phrasing, intents and purposes. That's just a funny thing I like to do on the show. One of my favorite all-time shows, The Sopranos, two-thirds of the lines were basically malapropisms. I'm a big fan of them. Like when you say, you know, we were out there dancing the flamingo.
Trailer Park Boys does it a lot, too.
Yeah, they do it a lot. Good. So I just like throwing them in.
Worst Case Ontario?
Yes.
Wasn't there a guy on in Living Color that did that, too?
Oh, wow. That is, who was that? I forgot about that show almost entirely, considering how much I watched it.
Right.
It wasn't Fire Marshal Bill.
No,
it wasn't Homie the Clown.
It was like the educated prisoner, wasn't
it?
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes. I don't remember the character off the top of my head.
Like the guy who goes to prison and starts reading books, but doesn't read them that well. Moj, I'm sure, has been enjoying all of this conversation, and I heard he was listening to the Pizza Robot bit.
He was surprised it was hot when I took it out. It's got to be a better way to say that. But.
Moj, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing well. You know, giving back to the malaprops.
Yeah.
You're talking Sopranos. Remember Pine Barrens?
Yes. The he was an interior decorator.
He killed 13 Czechoslovakians.
Yeah. That's a great moment. That's a great moment in TV history. That's exactly what I'm talking
about.
Oh, man.
I just howled. That was probably one of the best Soprano episodes ever. And, yeah, getting back to this, I'm listening. I'm hearing you guys talking about rolling vibrators.
Yeah.
I got A-Dog hooking up with a robot. I mean, I don't know what the hell's going on in the 7 o'clock hour. But I'm just wondering, the pizza better be warm, though. But A-Dog, suddenly it's got, like, a little heating mechanism to
it, did.
Right?
It did, yeah.
Yeah. And then who's to say, like, what about just kidnapping the robot one day? You see the robot, say, I'm going to kidnap the robot. Like, you know, hey, you want your robot back? Give me $500.
You would have to kidnap the robot because you can't get the food unless you have a personalized PIN, right, Andy? Like, they give you a code to access the
food. They do, yeah. They texted the unlock code.
But Moj went next level and just abducted the robot altogether, which would create a conundrum. There's got to be a tracking device on it. I'm sure you could track it down pretty quick.
Do you think that robot could survive in some of the tough neighborhoods of, say, New York, Chicago, whatever, Philadelphia?
No. Remember, there was a friendly robot that rolled through Philadelphia, and they defaced it and murdered it, if I'm not mistaken. So, no, there's only certain neighborhoods that the robot can exist in. Oh, hey, you know what? Your thought of tough neighborhoods and violence, that is a nice segue into the grudge match of this weekend between the Stamps and the Lions. Now, we had Vernon Adams on the show midweek, and I asked him what happened after the game against Calgary, and he politely completely punted on the question. But based on your understanding of it, because I know it was a lot of like secondhand information and this guy said this and this guy said that, what exactly went down from the end of the game and then to whatever happened in the parking lot?
Well, I've seen the video, and the Lions do have video of the incident. Now, the video doesn't show the punch. However, you see at the start of the video, you see Lucky Whitehead with his hands in the air. And then the cameraman, Nick Kowalski, kind of scrolls over to the scene on the field where guys are shaking hands and walking off. And you see Cam Judge kind of come running in, probably at about, I don't know, about like a 45-degree angle. You hear Whitehead say, "What are you saying?" And then the next thing you hear is like a punch, and then you scan back and Whitehead's on the ground. And this entire process takes probably about a second and a half or 2 seconds. Like if you're scrolling on the film, if you're scrolling on the video, you can actually start at 4 seconds when on the video that I have. And within a second and a half, Whitehead's on the ground. So, I mean, you can say what you want, but I mean, anybody who just kind of runs up and hits a guy with a punch to me is a sucker punch. So, yeah, that's what happened. And the league had the video. I don't think they're going to release the video. The Lions aren't going to release the video. And basically, it is what it is, as Todd Bertuzzi would say.
Right.
A one-game suspension.
Yeah, I mean, Judge is a fairly integral part of that defense, so it's a loss for Calgary for sure. But it just kind of adds to the spice of this game because it is a back-to-back. There was the bad blood after the game. It was a tight game. All the games with Calgary this year have been pretty tight. And you go into this weekend, so you've got the backdrop of all that. And then the Lions can clinch a playoff spot with a win at home, which is a big deal. So I feel like there's a lot of emotion riding into this game.
Yeah, there is. But I think probably the biggest emotion for the Lions right now is that sense of belief again. And I think that's what Vernon Adams gave them in Calgary. I mean, this was a team that struggled without Nathan Rourke, losing 2 games to Saskatchewan and Montreal. And, you know, Vernon Adams just gave this team hope. They believe they can win any game now with Vernon Adams at quarterback. I mean, he was 25 of 32. He didn't make any mistakes. He's getting more and more comfortable with the offense. And, you know, it's like having a goalie in hockey, guys. I mean, if you've got that guy back there that you think, you know, anytime he's in goal, you can win a hockey game. It's a great feeling to have. And conversely, when you have a guy that's, well, not that good, you feel like you got to be lights out to win a game. And the same thing holds true in football. And right now, I think the thing with Vernon Adams, he's given this team belief again.
We're speaking to Bob the Moj Marjanovic here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Moj is a presentation of the West Coast Auto Group. Great service, great selection just over the bridge in Maple Ridge. The other thing when we were talking to Adams Jr., was we talked about getting the ball out quickly and getting it into the hands of the receivers. You know, I was reading a couple articles that said that was one of the things that maybe people didn't really appreciate enough about Nathan Rourke when he was starring in the starting QB role was he had a great release, he's got a great arm, and the accuracy and speed in which he gets the ball out really accentuates this receiver group. So I got a feeling that that kind of might be the blueprint for Adams right now. You know, get it into the hands of the receivers. You don't have to make any, like, really long, complicated reads or throws. And then you saw it. He didn't score any touchdowns in the win last week, but he also didn't turn the ball over that much, and that's a recipe for success.
Yeah, and, you know, what happens, I mean, defenses eventually, if you keep, you know, just hitting those short routes, what's going to happen eventually, the defense will start taking those away, and then, you know, you take your shots downfield. So, you know, right now he's basically going to hit those short routes and feel comfortable getting to know the offense. And eventually the defense will start taking those and start jumping them. And once they do, then you start trying hitting the home run ball. It's like a chess match. It's back and forth, right? I mean, there's always a weakness in every defense. No matter what defense you call, there's a weakness. And it's the quarterback's job and the offensive coordinator's job to find that weakness in that defense that's called against you.
Can Vernon Adams be even better as he learns more about his teammates, or should we just expect what he did against the Stampeders? That's kind of what he does, and that's what we should be happy with.
I think he can get better. I mean, he's still not 100%, you know, up to speed with this offense. It's still a work in progress. And you know, you talk about the chemistry with the receivers as well, right? That's the other thing. I mean, the more you work with these guys, the more you learn the little nuances, the things they might do in certain situations. It's going to bode well for Vernon Adams, and it's going to bode well for the BC Lions offense. So, yeah, I think he can get better. Am I saying he's going to go 30 for 32 this week with 350 yards? No, but I think, you know, as we all know, progression's not linear. He might take a step back this week, but who knows, by 3 or 4 weeks from now, he'll probably be a lot more comfortable with the offense and probably putting up some decent numbers.
Seahawks this weekend, they are slim 1.5-point favorites at home against a, let's be honest, not very good Atlanta team. We just spoke to Brady Henderson from ESPN about all things Seahawks, and one of the things that we really talked about was the way that this team defends, or more specifically, the way that they don't. A lot of missed tackles, a lot of, you know, over-aggressiveness in pursuit and not making, you know, not finishing on first contact. There's a lot of guys that are getting yards after contact. Is that what you were seeing when you were watching the game against San Francisco? Because it was really glaringly apparent against the 49ers.
Yeah, there was one clip that I can't remember what I saw on what website, but they were talking specifically about the fact that they had, in football, there's an expression, we have people there, or we had someone there.
Right.
And what that means is you've basically, you know, executed the defense and you have someone there to make the tackle, and they don't make the tackle. And there's a great example that they showed where Taylor and Brooks were right there, and they should have been like a tackle for a loss, and instead it turns out to be a 13-yard gain. Because they don't make the tackle, and of course they're the second level, and once you get to the second level, you're kind of off to the races. So, yeah, I mean, I look at that run defense, and I think it's going to have to start with Brooks and Taylor, because they've been average at best for the Seahawks, or at least last weekend they were. And, I mean, hey, let's not kid ourselves. The offense hasn't scored a point in six quarters. I mean, I'm sorry, but it all kind of works hand in hand, right? I mean, if your offense is moving the ball, your defense stays fresh, and they can go out there and they can be aggressive, and, you know, field position's another issue as well. All of a sudden, it's, you know, your defense is out there all the time. You get worn down. And I heard Bruff talking about this earlier, and he made a really good point for once.
Thank you.
That there's nothing more depressing. And anyone who's been involved with football as a coach, a player, even as a fan, and, you know, Bruff pointed this out, when people are running at you at will, it is the most discouraging, depressing thing that can happen to a football team. Because there's nothing like, you know, it's not like the passing game where you kind of, you might be running some certain routes or whatever that you might not. This is just mano-a-mano. Hey, we're running the ball. We're coming right at you. Stop us. And when you can't do it, when you see these games where teams rush for 150, 200, or, you know, you see some of these college games sometimes where it's like 250, 300 yards. Man, it's like your manhood's being taken away from you.
Is it significantly harder to coach, teach, and practice tackling now in the modern climate?
I think so. And, you know, it's the pros and the cons. Obviously, the pros of not tackling, doing full-speed tackling drills in practice are that players obviously aren't getting injured. So, you know, you look at the money that coaches or organizations are investing in these players, the last thing you want to do is have a tackling drill and
Jordan
Brooks, you know, separate a shoulder right, in a full-speed drill. So clearly, but, you know, it comes at an expense. And you know, you get into games, and sometimes, especially with the NFL, you're not and even in the CFL, you're going to see sloppy tackling for the first 2 or 3 weeks because they haven't tackled in preseason.
Right.
I mean, you know, they don't do it in the games because they're not playing. And, you know, the first 2, 3, 4 weeks of the season, you're going to see sloppy tackling, and then eventually you see it kind of come around and get better.
Moj, this was great, bud. Thanks a lot for doing it. We really appreciate
it.
You want to ask us anything?
Ask us anything Friday, man. What's up?
There's a lot for you specifically, by the way.
Fire away.
Okay.
What do we got?
Juan from Comox. Question for Moj. Which Canadian stadium has the best food?
Talking hockey or football?
Wherever you want to go. You're so well-traveled, we'll let you go hockey or football.
I'll go Montreal and the hot dogs.
Yeah, that's a good choice. That's a very solid
choice. The hot dogs in Montreal are just like, they're like angels dancing on your tongue.
Ooh. Moj is a poet. That's very well done, bud.
I heard the Nordiques at the old Quebec Arena used to have the best hot dogs. Did you ever experience that? I never went to the Forum, and I never went to the Colisée either. But maybe it's just something about Quebec and food that's bad for you that they just do really well.
Legendary. There's a story, I think, one time John Garrett actually got hot dogs, like, delivered in between periods or something.
To the bench? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something like that out there. But, no, I mean, the hot dogs, the Quebec City, I heard, were, like, phenomenal, off the charts. I've never been, obviously, to a game in Quebec City, but I have been to a game at the Bell Center, and the hot dogs there, they pretty much carried over from the Forum. So, yeah, that's pretty good.
I'm going to
look fries in San Francisco, too, but that's another story.
I'm going to assume the answer to this is yes, but I'm asking because, for me, it's no. Have you've been to Schwartz's Deli in Montreal? Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. How good is that? Because I've never been. But, I mean, the pictures and the reviews and everything, it's like, I feel like I need to go at some point.
Julio and I always have a debate because he's a Dunn's guy.
I
like Schwartz's because it's just like, it's old school. You walk in there, it feels like, you know, you're in the 1940s or whatever. The red and white checkered tablecloths. And it's just a really cool place. And just the history of it all. Are you going to Montreal soon?
No, I haven't left the province in the better part of 3 years. But one day. One day I'll make my way back, and I'm going to go to Schwartz's and Dunn's in the same day.
There's always a lineup at Schwartz's, but let me know. I'll get you hooked up.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it. Okay, enjoy the Lions and the Seahawks this weekend,
bud. Hooked up at a deli.
I love it, man. I need this in my life. I got nothing.
If you ever go to Montreal, just ask for Frank. Tell him I sent you. You're all good.
See, this is tremendous. I need these kind of connections in my life. Thanks, Moj, buddy. Enjoy the weekend.
Great weekend, guys.
Dude, thanks. That's Bob the Moj Marjanovic here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650, a presentation of the West Coast Auto Group and your deli hookup guy when anywhere in the province of Quebec.
I don't think I've ever heard someone say, if you're going to this deli, tell them Moj sent you.
They'll
take care of you.
Remember when we used to, like, anytime Moj brought something up when we were doing the crossovers at 1040,
yeah,
he always had a guy. Remember he had a bed guy when he got his bed installed?
Oh, he did have a bed guy. Yeah.
I got a guy.
He
had a bed, like, built out with drawers and I'm assuming racing fins.
He's like Bob Sacamano.
Yeah. But he's like, well, I got a bed guy. And I was like, record scratch. Like, you have a bed guy. Like, how often are you getting beds that you
he's
have
got
a
deli guy?
Why wouldn't
he have a bed guy?
You could go to a deli on, like, a regular basis. I mean, how often are you getting your bed replaced? I guess if you're Moj.
You got a guy all the time.
You got a guy. Anyway, so okay, I'm not surprised he's got a deli guy.
We got to do two quick things in 10 minutes,
yeah,
which
right.
is really tough for us. The first is to make our NFL locks of the week. I'm 0-2, so bet against me. I'm in mid-season terrible gambling form. We've also got to do just a quick preview of Canada's friendly against Qatar, which starts about an hour after. We're not going to get too into, like, how do we break down Qatar? But it's more just, you know, Canada's got three friendlies left before the World Cup.
Fairly big deal.
So we're going to be watching to see what kind of form they're in, what John Herdman does with his lineup, how he deploys it, because I imagine that there's not going to be a ton of experimenting, but who knows? Let's start with the NFL.
Yeah.
I got my eye on a couple of games. Obviously, I've already talked about the Sunday nighter between the 49ers and the Broncos. I'm not going to bet on a Broncos game, even though I would like to bet on the Broncos again as kind of a reverse jinx. Although I don't know if I would, because I'd like the 49ers to lose too. So I'm going to choose another game that I'm really looking forward to. This is Sunday morning, Buffalo at Miami.
Going to be a good one.
A couple of 2-0 teams. That Dolphins-Ravens game was terrific. Obviously, the Dolphins had an incredible comeback. Tua had, what, six touchdown passes, but a couple of interceptions too. Very busy day for Tua. Tyreek Hill has been a great addition for the Miami Dolphins. The Dolphins are at home, and they're 5.5-point dogs. I get the line.
Mm-hmm.
Buffalo has been absolutely dominant. But I'm going to take the Dolphins plus 5.5 because I feel like this is going to be a real statement game for them. They're going to be ready to go. They're going to be feeling good about their comeback against the Ravens. I wouldn't be surprised if this is an absolute shootout that comes down to the last play of the game. So give me the Dolphins plus 5.5.
Lock of the week.
Everyone hear the snapping in the background?
I was getting to it.
Yeah, I didn't know. That was a good read. I'm going Monday Night Football here. So we got classic NFC East rivalry. It's the New York Giants and the Dallas Cowboys. Did you see what Jerry Jones did this week? I think Jerry Jones has, like, eternal FOMO. You know what FOMO is?
Yeah, fear of moving out.
No.
That's what I had as a young person.
And an old person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why are you telling me this?
Because Jerry Jones doesn't like it when the Cowboys aren't in the news and aren't in the spotlight. And when people aren't paying attention to him and paying attention to something else, he feels like he's missing out. He's got eternal FOMO.
Okay.
So this week, after 1 week of Cooper Rush at quarterback, he has now said, wouldn't it be something, Cowboys fans, if we had an open quarterback competition, maybe Cooper Rush won this thing. I love it.
So he's basically thrown into the equation, what, Dak's future in Dallas?
I think he just says stuff and doesn't really think of the ramifications. Because here's the thing. He doesn't want I understand from Jones's perspective. He doesn't want the season to go awry. He doesn't want anything other than to Cooper Rush go out there and win football games.
Yeah.
So why not boost this guy's confidence as much as possible going into Monday Night Football?
Yeah,
right?
Why not? Get your pick, because we got things to do here, pal.
Fine. I'm going to take the Cowboys. By the way, the Giants are a total mirage. They're not a 2-0 football team. They're only 1-point favorites at home. Mm-hmm. If you're going to give me the Cowboys plus a point on Monday Night Football against the Giants team that's not that good, I'll lock it up. Yeah, I know I took Dallas 2 weeks ago, but that was with the old starting quarterback, Dak Prescott. This is the new starting quarterback, Cooper Rush. Give me the Cowboys. Plus one, Monday Night Football, lock of the week.
Lock of the week.
Go. I love all the people that get like so fired up with my picks.
Yeah.
Like they're just like people angry. They're like, what are you smoking betting against the Bills? Well, then go make a bunch of money on it if you're so smart. Right? Like it's a point spread.
Yeah. It's also like.
If it's easy money, then why are you spending time texting into the show? You're so good at this. Make a lot of money gambling on sports.
In the listener's defense, sometimes we do bits and gags that people don't get. Right? Like, okay, you guys are through the looking glass here. Like, locks of the week, you should not spend any money on them. Right?
Yeah, obviously.
You don't do that.
We pick the most high-profile games or the funniest angles, and we go with them.
I use a bit from The Simpsons where he says, if you're right 51% of the time, that means you're wrong 49%. Like, that's... But again, this guy might not know that. He might think this is serious gambling advice.
Yeah,
you signed at Bills by 10. I think that means you're
You should go bet on that, man. Like
you also
that
should
seems
bet
like
on that.
That seems like free money. There's free money on this Buffalo Bills Miami Dolphins game.
Go to playnow.com. I'll throw that out there. Okay, you want to do the Canada soccer stuff now because they kick off in an hour and 40 minutes.
Yes. Okay. Canada, Qatar. What are you looking for? Just a few minutes here. Canada's got Qatar today. They play Uruguay in a few days. And then right before the World Cup in November, they play Japan. So three games to warm up for, again, the World Cup.
Yeah, well, you said, and I quote, come up with three things so it's not your usual scattered, disorganized analysis. Thanks for that, by the way. So three things that I'm looking for. Three things that Canada should be looking for. One, what's going to happen in the center of the park? Because everyone knows the first two games of the World Cup are going to be up against a midfield with Luka Modric and the Croats and Kevin De Bruyne and Belgium. Not in that order. It's Belgium first. Basically, it's going to be two of the biggest tests on the international stage right in the middle of the park, the center of midfield. Tough part for Canada with this two-game window here. No Jonathan Osorio, no Atiba Hutchinson, two guys that were very instrumental and like consistent figures during World Cup qualifying. The bigger issue is, are these guys going to get healthy in time to be ready for Qatar? Not the friendly that happens in an hour, 20 minutes, the actual tournament. So center of the midfield, that's one thing to look at. Stephen Eustachio is going to have to do all the heavy lifting. Two, the strength of this team, without question, is in attack. If you look at how they release their roster, the players at forward, Alphonso Davies, Jonathan David, Kyle Larin, Tayshaun Buchanan. Buchanan's out today, by the way. He's not playing. Junior Hoylett, who's going to captain the team, which leads you to believe he's going to start.
So, Mike, I just want to boil it down to, like, what is the number one objective for Canada in these games? Is it to get...
Well, that brings
like,
me to point number three.
Form, or is it to experiment with a few things?
Well, Jason, that brings me to point number three. The goal and the biggest thing of all the 3 points, can they get the good vibes back? That's
the
biggest thing.
Yeah, they've kind of lost the vibes, haven't
they? Lost their mojo.
Yeah.
Remember, when this team qualified against Jamaica with that 4-0 win at home, it was about as emotionally uplifting as it could be. Oh, my God, we're going back to the World Cup for the first time in 36 years. This team came out of nowhere to do it. They clinched at home. It was great. That was March. That was a long time ago. Everything since then has kind of been bad.
Mm-hmm.
There hasn't really been a lot of good moments over the better part of 7 months. Like there was the debacle here where they had the two canceled matches against Iran and Panama. They actually have only won one game in the last 7 months, and that was against Curacao. All due respect to Curacao. They've suffered some injuries. Guys that they thought that were going to go to European teams and play a lot haven't. And they're still embroiled in a battle with their own organization. Like it was such good times. Nothing really went wrong during World Cup qualifying.
Yeah.
Remember, we talked about that a few times? We're like, this feels really
magic.
Everything
went great. It was like a dream. It was a dream run.
And as sports fans, what are we programmed to happen when things are going really well?
Yeah, something bad.
And it did.
I actually think we made a joke after Canada had qualified for the World Cup, and we were all excited, and then we joked. And next comes like the I can't even remember what we called it, the crisis or the scandal. That was what we were
scandals.
Like. There's going to be a scandal for sure now. And while it wasn't a scandal, it was certainly like a big negative story.
So the biggest thing that they need to get out of this two-match window against Qatar and Uruguay is, honestly, it sounds kind of like a joke, but it's serious. They need to get the good vibes back. They need to be able to go into this tournament with something positive working in their fashion order, whatever. because they have also got a friendly coming up against Japan right before the start of the World Cup. And Japan absolutely destroyed the U.S. this morning, 2-0, in a match that the U.S. was taking very seriously. If you look at the shot differential, if you look at a lot of the metrics about how slanted this game was in Japan's favor, it really was. So Canada, I'm hoping, like all hope, that they can get a good result and they can show well against Qatar today. Then the big test is going to be next week with Uruguay, because that is a team that is one of the best teams in South America, has a ton of high-profile, high-priced players playing in big markets in Europe. It's going to be a real test for Canada.
One final segment to go. I know you all probably ran to your bookies because you heard there's free money available in this Bills-Dolphins game in Miami. Get your Ask Us Anythings in. Get your What We Learns in. One final segment of the Halford and Brough Show this week on Sportsnet 650.
Welcome to Colonalfarnia, West Coast.
Yeah. Kelowna, baby. Best place in the world right here.
Colonalfarnia. Colonalfarnia. Colonalfarnia.
Hey, 31 on a Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. Sweet, sweet, sweet Friday. Halford and Brough in the Morning is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. You can also visit them on the internet at campbell-pound.com today. We are also brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Three dealerships to serve you better. North Shore Acura, Acura of Langley, and Burrard Acura on Terminal Avenue. Okay, it is time for What We Learns and Ask Us Anythings. There are like a couple of stories that, quite frankly, probably deserve more mention on the show, but we're just going to run out of time. You saw how we crammed in stuff to the last segment. We haven't talked at all about the Ime Udoka story. I think that I might just wait till Monday, because it feels like there's new details being leaked out every waking moment of every hour of every day. I don't really have a firm grasp on exactly what's going on. I know it's my job, but there's a lot of other stuff going on. So we'll park that one. And real quick, you mentioned it in the notes. What a terrible turn of events for Nolan Patrick, the once ballyhooed prospect that was at one time in conversation for being the first overall pick in the NHL, has just been marred by concussion and migraine problems. And yesterday, Vegas announced that he's going to miss the entire season, which has just further derailed his career. He, of course, was the Elias Pettersson draft. So I just wanted to throw those two out there because we haven't mentioned them. Okay, we've got Ask Us Anythings and What We Learns. We got a What We Learned from Laddie. Why don't you go?
Okay. What we learned, this is perhaps one of the most embarrassing things on a playing field, playing surface that I've ever seen. I've done a lot of things that are embarrassing, long shot goals, misplaying the puck behind the net. But just listen to this clip. It's about 20 seconds long, and I'll explain it a little bit after.
1-1 pitch. Perez launches this one out to left center. And the wind, oh my goodness, going to knock it down.
He caught. Thought that was gone.
So did I. Malloy makes the catch. Perez, I think, still thinks it's out.
Oh, he
does.
He's
going around the bases.
He thinks it's gone. Oh, no.
There he goes, rounding the bases. He flipped the bat.
This, yes.
He did it all.
The call was great.
It was about 10 feet short of the warning track. It wasn't even close to being gone.
So the wind knocked it down, or he just didn't hit it as hard as he thought he did?
Probably a little bit of both.
So it's Delvin Perez, who plays for Atlanta's minor league affiliate. And the call
is awesome.
Sharing in his embarrassment in real time, like, oh no.
Like not just doing something like that, but just having the bravado to throw your bat.
What was he like blowing kisses to the crowd or something? Or?
And also kudos to the team, the opposing team, for not saying anything to him while he's rounding the bases. He got all the way to home before the umpire told him. And his reaction, if you watch the video, is pretty funny.
Because he did.
What was his reaction?
Just head in the hands, like he just couldn't believe.
Yeah, but the first reaction was like swag. Like he's like, I knocked this swag. I don't want to say he like bat flipped it, but he
bat flipped it.
Yeah, he was strutting, right? Like it was, oh man, I got this guy. And the reaction at home. It's a great clip. It actually does justice both in audio and video. Good job, Laddie. That's tough to do.
I'm so embarrassed. I wish there was a hole I could just crawl into and die.
Okay, throw in the hole.
That's kind of what I would feel like if I was in that.
Mook out. A-Dog, were you able to sort yours out?
Yeah. Okay. I got the audio for Laddie. So, yeah, what happened last night, it got a lot of play on Twitter because people were just, couldn't believe. Well, it is Daryl Sutter. So this is a Daryl Sutter press conference yesterday, I guess, after their practice. And one of the reporters, I'm not sure who, asked if he could make a comparison between Tyler Toffoli and Matthew Tkachuk. If Laddie, if you want to play the audio.
As far as their skill sets, any comparisons between Tkachuk and Toffoli?
One guy's won Stanley Cups. Been a big part of long playoff runs.
Now, naturally, people reacted like, is he just like murdering Tkachuk live here? Is that what's happening right
that's
now?
Exactly.
Because if so,
doing.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. That is awesome.
Yeah.
I'm sure Daryl Sutter wasn't very impressed with Matthew Tkachuk's performance in that Oilers series.
And then he asked, and then he wanted to quit the team.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why he specifically said that's a guy that's helped championship teams win. Mm-hmm. Like, in his mind, and he's not wrong, Tkachuk no-showed after game one in the second round loss to Edmonton, and then was like, yeah, I want out. I mean, I don't disagree with anything Sutter said. You don't usually say it out loud. It's like he said the quiet part out loud.
Well, he's not going to be very impressed with that.
No. And right? Yeah, and like Daryl Sutter's not going to try and like cajole. Like, he doesn't. What does he care? He doesn't have to deal with
He's not going to sit there and be like, we'll miss him a lot.
Yeah.
He's not going to sugarcoat it? No.
The one thing I'll miss the most, his smile.
Yeah. And the laughs. The laughs we had. No, he's not going to miss. He's probably super pissed. That was a tame version of what he wanted to say. That's a good find, though, too. I saw it, but I didn't hear it until right now. And he had the classic Daryl Sutter delivery, too, which makes it good. Okay, Mook, how that? Go.
So I learned at today's President's Cup session, it's four balls. Yesterday was the foursomes. I'm not going to get into the difference. Who cares? The two Canadians are together, Corey Connors and Taylor Pendrith. They will go up against Billy Horschel and Max Homa. Yesterday, the Canadians played. They were split up. Mm-hmm. Both of them lost. The Americans were so much better than the international team. And it was a little disappointing to watch, to be perfectly honest with you, because I really love team golf. Like, I love the Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
I love the President's Cup if it's close. Because I think there's something about team golf that I like the strategy. The stakes seem higher when you have to make a shot, and it's not just for yourself. It's for your team. Now, I know LIV Golf is trying this whole team thing. I'm not sure it's going to – there need to be stakes, like the country versus country, or, you know, if you just put together a team, I'm not sure it would work. But I would like to see either LIV Golf or the PGA Tour have more team events, just because I think it's fun, right? Like, golf is usually such an individual sport, and then you add this team element to it, it adds something.
Yeah.
The Canadians yesterday, I thought Pendrith played well. He was let down a little bit by his partner, Mito Pereira, on 18, who probably shouldn't be hitting tee shots on 18 ever again. Okay. He was the guy that hit that bad drive at the PGA that cost him. He had a bad drive on 18 yesterday. Taylor Pendrith actually had a putt to tie the match. He missed the putt. It was a long putt, longish putt. Corey Connors was disappointing. He was supposed to be, like one of the guys that this international team was going to depend on. Mm-hmm. Him and the Korean Im came up against Spieth and Thomas, and Spieth and Thomas are a good partnership for the Americans, but I don't know if you saw Justin Thomas hit one of the worst golf shots I've ever seen
a
professional golfer hit.
I did not see it.
And he actually does this sometimes. Justin Thomas has bad misses. He's a great player, but there was a par three that was, I think, about 178 yards. He fully chunked it. Like you would see this shot at Burnaby Mountain or Riverway.
Having worked
great
there,
courses,
I can attest.
Great bang for the buck. Not always the best golfers. Justin Thomas hit it maybe 120 yards, but here was the key. They tied the hole.
Right.
Because Jordan Spieth made a great pitch to within like a couple of feet, and they parred it, and the Corey Connors and his partner couldn't take advantage of it. And that just seemed like the story all day. Like, the Americans were making putts. They were great around the greens, and the internationals were just so far behind. I don't give Sunday much of a chance of being compelling. I hope I'm wrong about that, because I often look back on that Ryder Cup at Medina, mm-hmm. that Sunday where the Europeans staged the comeback, and I think it was the most fun I've ever had watching golf.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, I love Sundays at majors, don't get me wrong, especially when they're competitive, but there's something about team golf that I really enjoy. I don't need Halford to say anything about this. Give me a moo cow.
Thank God. Okay, let's go to the inbox.
I don't want to put you in that position.
My
Snoop the dog actually texts in, PGA versus LIV Golf would be fun. Yeah, that would be amazing, yeah. But I don't think that's going
to
happen.
And a knife fight to follow. That'd be fun too. Ask us anything. This is from Lofty the Washer Guy in Kelowna. What's the corniest sports movie ever? For me, The Replacements and Mystery Alaska. There is a laundry list of really bad sports movies. It's actually really hard to do because anyone that knows like anything about sports is going to watch them probably first and foremost, and then they're going to point out either the inherent flaws or how unrealistic it is, or like this is way over the top or anything, which I think is why the sports documentary has blown up in the way that it has, because there's a story being told for you authentically. Mm-hmm. It's the sport being laid out. But it's funny, you were saying that you were watching the Welcome to Wrexham documentary, and you said it almost felt scripted a little bit.
Yeah, it felt like they knew the story they wanted to tell, and now they're telling it.
Right.
To be fair, I really didn't give it much of a shot.
The reviews have not been like otherworldly.
Because I watched it for 5 minutes, and I'm like, yeah, this is what I expected. Like, you know, Ryan Reynolds and who else is he with?
Rob McElhenney.
Right, Rob McElhenney. Yeah. They've bought this team and now they're going to go meet the townsfolk, right? Yeah. And the townsfolk from this hardworking, I imagine, Welsh town. I don't know if they all worked in the coal mines or whatever there, but you know, they're going to say like how much the club means to them and how they're a little skeptical of these Hollywood types coming in here. And, you know, it's just, it's, there's no surprises.
Right. On that note, worst sports movies of all time, because for some reason we were talking about Ghostbusters 2 this morning.
Yeah, because it's amazing.
Oh, right. That's what it was.
Yeah.
A-Dog's favorite movie.
Well, one of them.
Ghostbusters 2. The fact 2. It's even in the conversation is
oh,
not...
Oh, dude.
Hold on. It's not Ghostbusters, but Ghostbusters 2.
Well, but they're both great. I love
arguably known as the most reviled sequel in movie franchise history.
Yeah, I've never gotten that. Ghostbusters 2
is
terrific.
I don't know if it was the most
popular. No,
it's,
no.
It's largely, I mean, it's largely low
People criticize it because it's obviously not as good as the first one. Yeah.
People criticize it because it is a poor example of movie making.
It's great. Ghostbusters 2 is awesome.
Oh, look
it's
at that
really
scary
good.
Painting. I think it's alive.
Hey, man, that I saw that when I was 5, and it still freaks me out.
Now, Andy.
Traumatized.
Now you're 7.
Yeah. And now, Andy,
a couple years.
Tell the people the adorable thing that you do with Ghostbusters
okay,
2.
Okay, so yeah, Ghostbusters 2 is my New Year's Eve movie.
Okay.
If I'm not out, I'll put on Ghostbusters 2. I want to say it's like 10:36 and change, and if you do that, right at midnight, Bill Murray will wish you a Happy New Year.
He's so adorable, folks. I just want to wrap up.
Corniest sports movie, how about Air Bud?
Air Bud's terrible. There's like 18 of them.
Filmed here.
The only reason I brought up the sequel thing is I didn't even realize there was a Caddyshack 2. Did you know that?
Straight to video?
Yeah, with Jackie Mason.
Really? I did not know that this thing
even... It's a horror movie, actually.
It's terrible.
It's horrible.
It's horrible. They turn Bushwood Country Club into a mini golf thing.
So it's on par with Ghostbusters 2.
What's the worst sequel of all time?
We've done this one before.
So it has to be, like, it can't just be, you know, the second Air Bud didn't match up to the first Air Bud or whatever, you know, like.
It really brought the franchise down.
Yeah, it has to be a really good first movie, first edition.
There's been a lot of weird, like, spin-offs of successful movies that don't have the same director, don't have the same cast. Do you really include those ones? Like, it's just a money-making scheme.
Because Bad News Bears was widely beloved, and then every subsequent one was not very good. But the problem when you look up these lists is it's the first movie always also kind of sucked too.
Is it the Rocky franchise maybe? Because like the first Rocky, of course, won the Oscar, and then all the follow-ups after that were, I mean, not, I wouldn't say terrible, but they definitely weren't anywhere near the quality of the original.
Yeah. I don't know if it was.
I'm not a Star War. Can you guys tell me how the second one was?
Well, the second one might have been the best, right?
Well, I mean, the original trilogy, Empire is considered the best. I guess of the new Star Wars trilogy, like the sequel trilogy, some people might say that they, you know, they hated The Last Jedi, but they loved the one before.
Oh, Starship Troopers 2 is a good one from our inbox. How
was that a good one?
No, it was not. Well, Starship Troopers is good, but the sequel is... You didn't like Starship Troopers?
I don't recall it being anything I would
Don't
remember.
Talk to him about movies. He really doesn't.
Cars 2. Because my kid was really into Cars. I remember Cars 2 being a letdown for a lot
one
of people.
One person did mention Dumb and Dumber, and that's a pretty good one, because obviously the first Dumb and Dumber is a classic. And
was it Dumb and Dumberer?
Yeah, and it was like a prequel
that?
Or something like that, yeah. And it was just absolutely atrocious.
Then they did an actual sequel, and it still wasn't.
And it wasn't very good either, yeah.
I'm actually I'm looking at a list here, and they have, I didn't even know this movie was made, Speed 2 Cruise Control.
Yeah.
The bus that couldn't slow down.
Just even Cruise Control. Like, what?
Is it going to be as good as the first?
Titanic.
You use,
Billy
you use,
and the Clonosaurus.
You use Cruise Control on, like, the boring stretches of highway.
Titanic 2, it's back and it's pissed.
Takes place in Saskatchewan.
yeah.
It's on the road to Melfort.
So you're saying the entire car chase scene exists in a 30-mile-an-hour zone. Can't have this.
A lot of people say the Matrix movies, like the first one, of course, is a classic, and the second and the third are, you know, they're okay, but definitely nowhere near as good as the first one.
So
that might be the right answer.
Hangover 2. Yeah, that was horrible.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Yeah, that's actually
Absolutely terrible. They ruined an otherwise great film.
That's a great
three
answer.
Hangovers, didn't they?
Yes, they did three.
One was so good, and the next two were just, I don't know why they made them.
Yeah. Oh, I get it. Speed 2 was on a cruise ship. So what, the cruise ship, this cruise ship gets below eight knots.
It's heading for that lighthouse.
It goes out of control. It's moving like 10 miles per hour.
That's pretty great. Oh, man.
Okay. Chris in the Hoof says Godfather 3. Yeah, we were kind of talking about second editions. Police Academy 5 wasn't the best. What was the one that Janet Gretzky was in? It might have been Police Academy 5. Citizens on Patrol.
Wow.
There we go. This is a good one in the inbox, and I think this would probably be my choice. Jaws 2, because the first one, you know, is one of the greatest films of all time, and every other Jaws after the first one was just, like, absolutely god-awful.
Yeah.
So I might actually say Jaws.
How did he get him in the end in Jaws 2?
I can't remember. It's been so long since I saw it. I just remember seeing him being like, why was this movie made?
Smile, You Son of a You-Know-What. That was the first one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
They put some air thingy in his mouth and shot a thing at it.
I love the whole idea that the shark had a family, and the family was like,
the shark had friends in big places.
Like, we're gonna get these guys.
Jaws 2 is about the mourning process. They're just remembering him. And
well, I remember. Was it?
How do you conduct a shark funeral? Do you go?
Was it the third Jaws that they made in 3D? And it was like a big deal at the time. The movie was terrible.
That sounds.
But it was like, this shark is coming right at me.
Yeah.
Anchorman 2, see a couple of votes for that.
Anchorman 2. Yeah. Some of these I don't even know exist.
Zoolander 2, there's a Zoolander 2. Not good. Some good votes in there.
Okay, here's an Ask Us Anything. If you had to keep only one of Dom or Laddie or A-Dog, who would you choose? We've done this before. Like, it's a fight to the death.
I loathe all my children equally.
Like, I wouldn't choose. I would make them make the decision for me.
With a series of feats of strength.
No, just a straight.
Georgie,
straight.
Fight your father.
I'm more of like a trickery kind of fighter. I'm not into that.
Great.
Just pocket sand in my
not
face.
Into the brute strength kind
Greg's
of thing.
Greg's finishing move is kicking a guy in the back when he's not looking. Yeah. I'd make them fight to the death for sure.
Ask us anything.
But I again, to confirm, I don't like all of you equally.
Yeah.
Good. Thank you.
From the Fordo.
Hey, Fordo.
Ask us anything. Should the CFL consider markets like Victoria, Kelowna, Saskatoon, and Quebec City? The CFL was founded when cities were small and thrives in smaller markets with less competition. I think it's an intriguing thought for sure. Mm. Because one of the things about Saskatchewan and why it's such a strong market is that they don't have, like, Winnipeg has the Jets, right? Calgary and Edmonton, they have the NHL teams. They're not the only game in town. I know Saskatchewan has junior hockey, and they get into that, but it's not the same. If you listen to, I've been to Saskatchewan, and I've heard their sports talk radio.
Oh, yeah.
They get into the Riders like we get into the Canucks.
I have heard it. Can confirm.
And I think there is something to be said for going to a smaller market and being the big fish in a small pond. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. I like to refer to those markets as the mid-majors. It's like in, you know, college basketball. It's like they're...
Yeah. They're a big deal.
Yeah. It matters when you're a mid-major, right? Mm-hmm. But you're a big fish in a small pond, right? And I think it's an intriguing idea. Because I think growth into new markets would probably be a priority for a team that a league that has 9 teams. It's an odd number. The Lions, we joked about this the other day. Like the Lions are playing back to backs this week. They're playing the same opponent home and away.
Yeah.
In consecutive weeks, like it doesn't really happen in
football.
They
need to get it up to 10 teams at least.
That would help.
I don't know if they're going to end up going to the Maritimes. They got to build a stadium there.
Has that been in the works for a while?
Yeah. It has been in the works. I mean, the pandemic really screwed things up. They did have some momentum there. Mm-hmm. I think it would be. They got to pick the city though. Where is it going to be? Would it be Halifax? Would it be Moncton?
Could they just rotate?
I wonder.
I'm not even half joking.
No. They're having enough trouble building one stadium. I don't think they're going to need three.
The players would love it. It's like I have to move every month to a different maritime province.
Oh man, some of the stories about them going to the Maritimes would be incredible though.
Great. Are you done there? Because I got one.
I'm
here.
Done. Yeah.
This is Less Depressed Finn. Not sure exactly what that means, but I'm reading it aloud. Ask us anything. Can the Canucks turn Ian Clark into a goalie factory and build up Martin, Seelovs, et cetera, to trade for good young defensemen while keeping top quality goaltending for the team? Friend, I think we've talked about this a million times, probably mentioned it a few more. To get the assets that you want in the door, it's going to take a really good asset going out the door. No one trades anything of quality for goalie prospects. You'll get a couple picks, and it's a speculator's game. We go back to the Horvat conversation that we had off the top. The only reason to talk about him in the trade context is justifiably he would net you something in return. Wingers don't even get you much in return anymore.
Yeah.
You could have plucked him for free this summer if you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Could have had Max Pacioretty for free. You could have had Oliver Bjorkstrand for free if you had the cap space.
Mm-hmm.
That's the goalie market is not something that's flush with like trade value and trade assets.
Yeah, we need the Ian Clark that can coach up right shot defensemen.
Can you do that? Can you make one of those out of thin air? That would be nice. So a couple of people pointed out too that when Rutherford said that there's no good young right shot defenseman in the system, that everyone was like, he's pointing at Jet Wu. And I guess he kind of is by not pointing at him.
What about Jonathan Myrenberg?
Yeah. Like, I mean, if he's not mentioning them, then there's a reason that he's not mentioning them.
Mm.
I wouldn't have any expectations for those guys to be what Rutherford envisions as a good young right-handed defenseman that's going to join the team.
Hey, you know who's coaching with the Giants now?
Who?
Brent Seabrook.
Oh, that's
good
correct.
Right-handed defenseman.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Speaking of the Giants, they begin their season tonight, you guys.
Ooh.
The WHL. It's Junior Hockey Christmas today.
I had no idea.
BCHL and WHL are kicking it off tonight.
I'm stoked. I hate to ask it in this way, but when do the Giants host Connor Bedard?
Later in the season, but they also have the prospects game this year. So.
Right.
I'm going to town.
I would like to go see the Bedard game because there's a couple road trips that we have to make. We have to go see a Giants game and we have to see an Abbotsford Canucks game.
Right.
I would like to be there for the Connor Bedard game because I think it would be cool. You're like, yeah, I watched him as a junior hockey player, right? It's actually too bad he doesn't play in BC.
Someone texted in, it's the third Giants game of the season. That's the Connor Bedard game. And you know what?
At home?
Because we refuse to look things up or verify information for ourselves. There you go. You could text in anything at this point. You could be like, they don't play Connor Bedard this year. And we'd be like, oh, yeah, that checks out.
Season's canceled. Yeah. Oh, well, season's canceled, I guess.
Dang. They were just going to get started, someone told me. Do we figure it out? We have four guys.
The schedules
four computers.
For the WHL website leaves a lot to be desired.
Yeah, that's a tough website to get around, honestly.
Just got
to
say.
Do you remember when the CFL website was mostly PDFs?
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
You'd have to
I remember when we would be looking up stats and be like, my dad could not get through this.
You know what? I will say, I do miss the old printout days.
November 25th.
Yeah, there
the
you go.
Diana's in town.
Bruff used to have
so it's not the third game.
Yeah, he got it completely. That's what I said. We should have checked it out before we put it out there.
November
for
25th, the Regina Pats.
Bruff had this. We used to work at an office back in the day, and they had one of those high tech industrial printers that could print out millions of pages at once. He found the inherent value of it. You would print out like books at work. You remember this? You would print out 80 to 90 pages.
Bill Simmons' articles. Yep. I'd be like, yeah, we're doing that.
You'd be at the printer for like 7 minutes. So I'd be like, what's he printing out? I'm like, very important things.
Yeah. I did print out some long stuff. I'd be like, here's a textbook. Yeah. I want the whole thing.
Okay, we got to go print some stuff. But we will be back on Monday. Signing off for now. It's been a fun week. Thank you all for joining us. I've been Mike Halford. He's been Jason Bruff. He's been Laddie. And he's been A-Dog. Give me the bark. Give me the bark. Give me the bark. This has been the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650.